Welcome to Watch Out, where we dig through our DVD dungeon, where we scour the endless streaming landscape, all to help you find some kick-ass horror movies.
Hello and welcome to Watch Out, the Horror Movie Review Podcast. We're glad to have you with us. Our goal is to provide you with spoiler-free reviews and recommendations for both recent films and horror classics. And to not be boring, I am Jason the Terrible from Ottawa, Ontario, and I am joined, as always, from Vancouver, BC, by Grave Robber Jeff.
Hello.
And Slice and Dice and Dave.
The pleasure is all mine, gentlemen.
What do we want to talk about first? I'm sure there's so many things we want to talk about.
Hey, how about that unfortunate news about Norm MacDonald, eh? I was a big fan of Norm MacDonald.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, you're a big Norm MacDonald fan, right?
Yeah, I got to see him live a couple times. He's pretty good. I've got his DVD box set of his old show as well.
Hey, did I go with you to both those ones, Jeff?
I think you probably did. I can't remember for sure, though.
Friggin' love that guy. What a damn shame.
His style of comedy just was my, hit with me very well.
Yep.
Did you guys see him on the roast of Bob Saget?
Oh, God, probably. Nope. I don't watch many roasts, which is funny. But
this one was retweeted the day that they announced that he had passed, and they were saying how brilliant it was. And so I watched it. It was just bad joke after bad joke. And then I realized, reading the comments, it's like, oh, that's the brilliance of it, was that he was intentionally bombing because Bob Saget is such a blue comedian. Norm MacDonald was up there doing an intentionally unfunny set, but selling it as if he was completely serious. And he just did it through the whole thing.
See, that would make me laugh.
He was
good,
like,
old Norm.
He's like, so Bob Saget, you know, they say his face is like a flower, like a cauliflower. You know, Bob,
that's comedy genius right there.
Bob, you know, your face, it's so ugly, it's cauliflower.
The best was what he was talking about, he was talking about vampire movies or whatnot, and then, but instead of calling them vampires, he was calling them Draculas. God, it was goddamn hilarious. He's like, it's with these young kids and their Draculas or whatever. Do you remember that one, Jeff? That was pretty goddamn hilarious, if I remember
correctly. I vaguely remember it, yeah.
Anyway, Norm MacDonald, everybody.
So I watched the HBO documentary on Andre the Giant.
Oh, I remember that. He was a professional wrestler back in the day, wasn't he, Jay?
He was, with the WWE. Don't sue me.
It's like, couldn't they both have the same goddamn acronym? Is that what it is, an acronym?
YouTube's great nowadays because you can see all those old interviews on David Letterman and stuff for some of these old wrestlers. And there's one with Andre on David Letterman that's pretty funny. Yeah, so I suggest you look him up if you like old wrestlers.
Well, what was so funny about David Letterman interviewing Andre the Giant?
I don't know, because Andre the Giant's he comes across as such a lovely human being. And then David Letterman's I think he's afraid of him or something. Or he just didn't know how to talk to him because he was so massive or something. I don't know. But it came across as very... He was kind of being kind of a dink towards Andre, I thought. And Andre's being this cool guy just sitting there answering the questions. It's like, I wish I met Andre in real life and had a beer with him.
I think typical night for him, according to the documentary, was 124 beers.
Yeah, it's so insane. God, I wish I would have met him.
How is that even possible? Oh, my God. Rob, we're talking about a lot of past human beings in this world. Jeez. You know what? It's nice. It's nice to reminisce. That's the whole point, that they were here on this earth, so we can reminisce about them.
Well, so I would highly, highly recommend the Andre the Giant HBO documentary. I think you can watch it on Crave in Canada, but I don't have Crave, so I went out and bought the DVD. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to open up our mini review segment. This episode's theme is to pick a movie from the grand old year of 1989. That's it. That's the theme.
Shouldn't we get an explanation on why you picked 1989?
Yeah, that's a good point, Jeffrey the Terrible. Or Jeffrey Jason. Grave Robin Jeff. Jason the Terrible, what the hell? Why'd you pick 1989?
Well, I'll tell you why I picked 1989. It's actually a complex thought process and some devious strategy. Every time we do one of these newfangled theme selections, the whole point was for me to dig into my DVD dungeon and watch a movie, and you guys pick these themes that I don't have in my DVD collection, so I have to go stream them. So all I did was go to Letterboxd and start going year by year until I found one that I knew I had a DVD of. So, hey, 1989.
Seems like a good process.
And, you know, next time it'll probably be something like, hey, 1997. I don't know. We'll see. I should just say this, though. Let's travel back to 1989, just really quickly. This was the year where we saw such fright classics as Pet Sematary and A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child. Also Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. And Halloween 5. And Shocker. And the original Puppet Master. And Deep Star 6. So, Slice and Dice and Dave, you're in 1989. What are you watching?
Slice and Dice and Dave, Scream and Stream Saga.
Probably like the real Ghostbusters, to be fair. We sure talk about the real Ghostbusters a lot. But no, you know what? It's funny because I was like, ooh, hey, how exciting. We get to look up a year and look at all the movies made. And so I typed in the old 1989 horror in Letterboxd there. And I was like, ooh, there's some really good ones here. But every one that I wanted to watch, I couldn't watch in Canada without dropping a good $5 to rent it. And I'm sorry, I wasn't ready to friggin' drop $5 to rent a movie this particular weekend.
I spent $5 to rent a movie last episode.
I do remember that, so I feel kind of cheap, but that's life. But the issue was, like, there were such classics as I wanted to watch Death Spa, or The Church, or even Dead Calm. Did you hear of Dead Calm with Sam Neill and Billy Zane and what's her name?
I'm looking at Nicole the icon Kidman right now.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I was like, hey, these look all awesome. And then I couldn't watch any of them. So I picked another movie that I couldn't figure out how to watch either. But then I found it. I don't know. Can I say this? I don't think I watched it legally. So here it is. From 1989. Dr. Caligari, the Mad Doctor, is in. And then this is the little blurb from Letterboxd. And this is what got me into it here, fellas. Listen up. Mrs. Van Houten has shown signs of losing touch with reality, and her husband discusses possible treatment with Dr. Caligari, who says Mrs. Van Houten has a disease of the libido. I said two things. I said, that sounds fantastic. And secondly, Mrs. Van Houten from The Simpsons. So I said, I gotta look into this. Now, it's funny, I was going to say, you're either going to love this movie or you're going to hate it. But me, I was precisely in the middle. I'll give you my rating now. It was a 5 out of 10. The reason being, I was just on the verge of really liking it, but I was also just on the verge of thinking it was just terrible. And I'm still in the middle. I don't know if I liked it or if I hated it.
That is interesting.
It is. It's a bizarre film. It's like kind of like an art housey type film. The credits almost made me look for a new movie right away. I was like, this is just awful. So I watched, and then there's this chick kind of sitting in this chair out in the middle of this weird ass field, and she's watching TV. Anyway, she's having these dreams, eh? But like, these are like kind of weird, kind of, how do I say this on a podcast here? They're kind of like sex dreams, you see? And I was like, this is bizarre, I said. And then, and so of course I'm watching it downstairs in the living room.
But wasn't it in the synopsis that it was all about sex dreams?
Well, somewhat, yes. So I guess I wasn't too caught off guard, but I tell you what, like, it got pretty sexual, shall we say. Now, at that point, I was like, oh God, I hope my wife doesn't come down right now, because I'm going to look like I'm watching something that I shouldn't be watching in the living room. I was like, okay, well, maybe I should, I can't really talk about this on a podcast, so maybe I'll pick another one. And I said, well, you know what, man, I've already started it. It's Friday night. You know, it's been a long week. I trudged forward. I said, you know what, I can put up with this.
You took one for the team.
I sure did. I said, I can do this for our listeners here. And then it kind of got into the storyline, which was, I guess, bizarre to say the least. This Dr. Caligari gal, it's like she has these weird treatments in order to help people and stuff, eh? And there's, and it's super bizarre and super far out there. Yeah, and then there's this one scene where, like, I guess she opens this door and it's like nothing but flesh, and this giant, like, tongue flops out. And she starts, like, smooching this tongue, and just the tongue just starts going all over, and oh, never mind. Maybe I don't want to get into it. It was something else, I'll tell you that. It was just flopping all over the place, and I couldn't tell if I really liked it or, well, I'll tell you, I didn't hate it. And then they switch bodies and stuff, and there's a cake that they cut into, and it's like all gross and tentacly. Like, I just don't even know how to explain this particular movie. Like, it is a horror movie. But it is like they tried to do something really bizarre. It's like, it's weird. It's like I was reading somebody's review on Letterboxd, and they said, oh yeah, it reminds me of like Pee-wee's Playhouse kind of, but like an adult version. And that was precisely right. It was kind of like Pee-wee's Playhouse-y, or like Rocky Horror Picture Show-y. It's really kind of far out there. And there is some bizarre horror to it as well. So it would be classified a horror movie. Have you guys ever heard of Dr. Caligari?
I've heard of the character, but not this particular movie.
Yeah, yeah. So she's like, I never really heard of the character as well.
And I didn't know it was a she. So this.
Well, no. She's like the third grandchild or something. She's a relative of the original Dr. Caligari. I don't know how to help you out, guys. I watched it and I don't know what I watched. Weird things going on regarding the sex dreams, but then you get introduced to a couple other crazy people, which is kind of cool. It's a pretty interesting flick. I don't know whether you should watch it or not watch it.
Let me ask you this. Is it gory?
Not really.
Is it scary?
Not really. Correctly,
so it's
no.
it's kind of acid trippy.
It's acid trippy, that's for sure. There you go. If you like movies about
like a David
drugs.
Lynch type thing.
it's not drugs, but yeah, maybe. Yeah, there you go, right? It's definitely something different, especially for a horror movie. But I mean, I'm glad I watched it. You know what I'm saying? Dr. Caligari, never heard of it. 1989, Libidos and Mrs. Van Houten. Those were the reasons I watched it. So it was directed by Steven Seyedian or something. If you click on films he directed, it'll take you to Cafe Flesh, which was apparently some sort of adult film. Oh, Laura Albert was Mrs. Van Houten, the one with the issue. No, but she's been in a lot of stuff, actually. You might remember her, fellas. Did you guys ever watch a TV series in 1990 to the 1991 time called Dream On?
Yeah, I have a DVD set of the first two seasons of Dream On.
Get out of town. I think that might have been all it was, wasn't it? Was it only two seasons? Anyway. Do you remember the whipped cream gal?
It's funny you should mention that, but yes, I absolutely do remember the whipped cream gal.
Well, she's Mrs. Van Houten. So there you go. If you're interested in seeing something else she did, this is a movie for you. Oh yeah, and then she was a go-go dancer in Tales from the Crypt. Oh, and she was Rocker Chick number 3 in Dr. Alien. That was a pretty good movie.
That's where
anyway,
I saw her.
Yeah, Rocker Chick number 3. And then Dr. Caligari herself is none other than Madeline Raynell. And she is known for Dr. Caligari and Space Mutiny. Only two films, eh? I don't like to put people's actings and stuff down, but I wasn't the biggest fan of hers. Acting wise, but I was a fan of the Van Houten gal though, so there you go. And then let's see, who else? Oh yeah, there's this dude. I think it was John Durbin. So he's been in a few other things, and he was actually pretty cool. He's a little out there. He was from the Return of the Living Dead. He was a radio corpse. Oh shit! He was in the miniseries of The Shining, from 1997. He was Horace Derwent. But anyway, I thought he did pretty well.
So what's the runtime on this one?
Yeah, you might be interested here, Jeff. It comes in at a whopping 80 minutes long. So 1 hour and 20 minutes. Now, like I say, you're going to have to look for this particular movie because it's not. Oh yeah, I guess, like I said, you just search it on Google and you'll find it on a streaming service. There you go, boys. Dr. Caligari. As long as you can make it past the credits, you're in for an interesting ride.
All right, thank you very much, Slice and Dice and Dave.
You're welcome.
I'm always amazed by what comes out of your scream sack.
Well, see, this is the thing. I was like, you know what? We might as well, like, review something that no one's heard of, just in case it was awesome. And then I could tell you to go and watch it. Unfortunately, it wasn't awesome. So there, yep. I saved you guys some time.
All right, it's my turn.
Jason the Terrible's DVD Dungeon.
So like I said, I picked 1989 because I knew I had a 1989 movie in my DVD dungeon. So I picked the movie Parents.
Oh, nice.
So this is a period piece. It takes place in the 1950s. What?
Period piece.
It's a period piece. It takes place in the 1950s.
I guess so. I just think of England back in the day. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, go on.
1950s suburban America.
Copy that.
You get to see all sorts of old cars in the driveways and old clothes and old houses. And it was filmed in Toronto, actually. So maybe Toronto just has a whole bunch of old houses. Parents is the story of Michael, who is a strange boy. He doesn't really fit in at school. He has a problem with recurring nightmares that are really graphic and again, kind of acid trippy. And
what the?
He's starting to think that his parents might be cannibals.
Oh my God, what are the odds of this?
I know, so it kind of follows the same theme as our feature review. Really, that's the plot of the movie. That's really all that needs to be said. You've got this unanswered question going through the whole movie. Are his parents actually cannibals? Is it one of his elaborate dream sequences? Let's talk about the acting first, because this is actually pretty impressively acted, I have to say. Brian Modorsky stars as Michael. He looks kind of like a 10, 11, 12-year-old, something like that. His parents just moved him from Massachusetts to a new school. This movie stars Randy Quaid as the father, who many people will remember from the National Lampoon's Vacation series, Cousin Eddie. That's certainly where I remembered him from. And I couldn't recall ever seeing him in a horror movie before. You guys know Randy Quaid, right?
I know what Randy Quaid.
Yeah, so he wouldn't have been a first choice for this kind of role because, you know, his father character is a little menacing. His son is never completely comfortable around him. But is it extreme enough that this guy is actually a cannibal? I had so many theories going through my head while I was watching it. At a certain point, I was like, okay, get through the movie because I want to find out exactly what's going on. And that was a good thing. You know, it's only an hour and 20 minutes. Around the hour mark, I was like, okay, do I care anymore? I'm not really sure. But it had something there for a while. The mother is played by Mary Beth Hurt, who seemed very familiar to me, but I don't think I've seen her in a lot of places. She was in the movie World According to Garp. A little more appropriate, she was in My Boyfriend's Back, which is a zombie comedy, and she was in Lady in the Water as well, the Shyamalan film.
Right on. I loved My Boyfriend's Back back in the day. It was fantastic.
So obviously most of the movie is about the relationship between the father, the mother, and the son. We've got the father who's acting very creepy. We've got the mother who is still acting like a very loving mother, but she's also acting very creepy. And then we've got a young boy that doesn't really know if he can trust his parents, thinks there's something very sinister going on, and is having crazy nightmares. I think it would have worked a lot better as like a half-hour version of Tales from the Crypt or something like that, you know? The fact that it had to stretch out, it was a bit long. There were some plots that just dangled. But there's a lot of hints here that the that the mother and father are up to some dastardly, not socially accepted culinary practices. Just the way they film what they're cooking was an art in itself. Like, how do you make it look like the meat is suspiciously
human?
Yes. How do you film the meat in a way that it looks like it might be human? It's like, think about that for a while. How would you do that? You know, they set it up pretty well that way. Okay, so it's interesting because there's not a lot of gore in this. Some of the nightmares that Michael has, like, for example, early in the movie, he jumps into bed and it turns into this huge sea of blood. So I guess you could call that gory, but really it's just as if he was diving into red Kool-Aid. There's a couple of murders. There's an overall sense of dread. But what's interesting is this is listed as a horror comedy. There's definitely no laugh-out-loud moments to it. Like, I guess you could call it darkly comic, but even then, it's like it's not committing to that. It was a bit more artsy than I was expecting. Again, with the acid trip sequences, like you were talking about for your movie, Dave, there were some camera shots and effects in here that I don't think I've ever seen done before. So that was neat. Huh. You know, it's not a typical 80s horror movie. The acting was really good. I thought Randy Quaid was great in a role like this. I thought the kid was great. I thought he was a great, convincing young kid in a very stressful situation. This was his only movie. There's something in the Wikipedia saying, oh, this guy's now an accountant. I don't know how much I can trust that, but I would imagine his real parents probably saw what he was up to and was like, nope, that's it. You're not acting anymore. You're done. I came in with my usual six. I would recommend it if you want to try something a little different that you haven't seen before. Well, I guess the last thing I would say about it is that it's funny. The tagline is, there's a new name for terror. That has nothing to do with the movie. But, you know, who hasn't at one point in their childhood looked at their parents and thought they might be up to something sinister? So I think they had a great start of a concept there. And like I said, the first half of the movie, I was really wondering what was going on. And then somewhere along the way, I just sort of lost the urgency. So it's not that it became completely boring. It just kind of lost its uniqueness. That's Parents, 1989.
Parents!
I was going to say, it sounds weirdly like my movie that I'm going to review.
That's interesting, because when you go and look at the More Like This section, it says Society.
Grave Robber Jeff's Fresh Dig.
And I just got to say off the top, guys, thank God I picked this movie. Because I was... The last two movies I watched, the one we are talking about later, and the one from last episode, I needed something to remind me why I loved horror movies. And that is this one here, Society from 1989. Just a quick synopsis here. A teenage boy becomes wary of his family's desire to please the upper class and discovers the truth about a horrifying secret cult. So off the bat, there's actually a couple interesting horror tie-ins here where the director is Brian Usna,
woohoo!
Who did Bride of Reanimator and Beyond Reanimator, I think, and The Dentist, a bunch of different things. But the producers of Reanimator wanted him to direct the Bride of Reanimator. And he said, well, I'll only do that if I can do the Society movie first. And so they actually helped him out with the Society movie as well. Yeah. So the main guy the teenager is questioning his family is Billy Warlock, who plays Bill. He was actually in Halloween 2, and his dad played the Shape in Halloween 2, and his brother was also in Halloween 2, so that was kind of interesting. There's a few hospital exterior shots. It's the same hospital from Halloween 2, so it seems like there's a bit of crossover between those two that had a lot of people from it. Anyways, the story, so it's an hour and 40 minutes long. And I have to say that the first probably hour or so is really all about good old Billy just living his own life, kind of questioning why his family doesn't really take an interest in his life at all. They hate his friends who are kind of from the lower class and drive like goofy old vans and stuff. And while he's living this life, he just randomly sees, like, very, very strange things. And so that's one of the intriguing things, like, what's going on? Like, why are you actually seeing these things? And he's seeing a psychiatrist. You see some of the psychiatrist scenes where he's trying to explain, what the heck, I'm seeing all these things. And then, eventually, his sister's old girlfriend, sister's old boyfriend, actually brings some evidence to his attention. He's like, hey, Bill, like, I think something weird is really going on here. You gotta, like, listen to this tape I've got. So they listens to the tape, and he hears all this crazy stuff about, like, what his family's talking about and doing, and, like, all this crazy stuff. He's like, wow, this can't be real. And so a lot of it is, like, what's going on? He's seeing all these things. Everyone he seems to talk to it about, other than the boyfriend, or the old boyfriend, seems to think or say that there's nothing going on, and it's just all in his head. And then pretty much the last half hour of the movie is one of the most crazy things I've ever seen in terms of entertainment value. The tagline of the movie is, or there's a few taglines, I guess, like other ones, but the one that really sticks out is, it is not what you think it is. So I was like, yeah, that kind of sums it up pretty good. Oh, I'll just mention one other tidbit. One of the gals in this one, who plays Billy's original girlfriend, who he eventually doesn't date anymore, but Heidi Kozak, played the Pimple Popper girl in Slumber Party Massacre 2. As well
you
as
don't
she
say.
Was in, yeah. And she was also in Friday the 13th Part 7, which is interesting. And I thought, like, the first hour of the movie would be boring because it's really, it's more like about Bill's paranoia, and it's kind of slow moving, but I really liked how they did it in terms of just throwing in these random, like, weird stuff just to make you question what's going on. There's a scene when he walks in on his sister having a shower, and things just aren't quite right. We'll put it that way. And it gets you thinking, like, what the hell is going on here? And you ask yourself that a lot in the first hour. And then when you find out what it is not what you think it is.
Yeah, just like the tagline.
Exactly. So, well, yeah, I'm curious what you guys thought, because you've already seen it.
Yeah, no, I think I saw it way back in, like, what the hell year was it? Maybe way back. It's only like 12 years ago. Something like 2009 or something. When I was living out in England, you see, they had a channel called the Horror Channel or whatnot, so you could stream it online, and it had horror movies that you wouldn't normally see anywhere else, which was awesome. And that's how I saw Society, and I said, what the hell was that? That was fantastic. Then I went and bought the Arrow release of Blu-ray of Society. I liked it so much. It's just something else, isn't it there, Jeff?
Yeah, it's just everything about what I like of that era of horror movie. I guess it's a horror comedy, just highly entertaining. there's just stuff you don't expect. Yeah, and his dad's a real butthead, I'll just say that.
I love when Brian used them, man. Society, Bride of Reanimator, Silent Night, Deadly Night, 4.
So Grave Robber Jeff, you're saying that this movie brought back feelings of why you love horror movies.
Because the last couple were just, the turbo meter was too high. And this was just a delightful romp, I guess you could put it that way.
The turbo meter wasn't even a little bit high on this one?
No. There's nothing disturbing about this one. All fun and games in the horror comedy genre.
Pretty gory, though, right?
Not really. Well, there's no, like, blood and guts, but there's things that happen that would be uncomfortable for the person, I guess.
I think you could probably apply that logic to any scene in a horror movie.
I guess you're probably right. Well, what the hell would you give Society, Jeff, out of 10?
I'd give it a big fat 8 out of 10.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
All right. Well, should we move into... should we take that disturbometer up a few notches and move into our feature review?
Why the hell not, eh?
And now watch out for our feature presentation.
This is Ass Smoking Slice and Dice and Dave coming in hot here. It's my pick for a movie this week. So this dude at work, one of my dolly grips, comes up to me and says, like, hey, I'm listening to your podcast. I'm like, holy shit, someone actually listens to our podcast? And he's like, yeah, man, friggin', you guys should review Cannibal Holocaust. And I said, I've already seen Cannibal Holocaust. And then I said, maybe we should review Cannibal Holocaust. I figured you guys hadn't seen it, had you?
I don't care for Cannibal Holocaust.
Or maybe I do. Oh, shit. I screwed it up.
You screwed it up?
Yeah, my apologies. So had either of you seen Cannibal Holocaust?
I had not, but I had known it was a controversial movie.
Well, I had seen it, hilariously enough, around the same time I watched Society. So around 2009, I was in England. I don't know how I got a copy, because it was on the old Video Nasties list out there, wasn't it? Anyway, good old internet. So I watched it back then, and I just remember, I was younger then, you see. What was that? I was like 25 or something like that. The only thing that kind of affected me that whole time was, I'm sure we'll get into this, but the turtle scene.
Just to bring up, this would be the second movie in a row that had the Shudder disclaimer after not seeing it ever. So there you go.
So yeah, the Shudder disclaimer at the beginning is a polite note of warning. The title's deemed extreme comes shrouded in ultra-graphic content, controversy, and in certain cases, legal dispute. They can be as intense and vivid as they are culturally and cinematically significant. Shudder is proud to present these transgressive, boundary-pushing, sometimes banned and totally rad films in their most complete form. For the squeamish, discretion is advised. And then in red, we'll see you on the other side. Shudder knows how to write a disclaimer. Well, okay, Slice and Dice and Dave, how about a synopsis? Yeah.
Oh, geez, yeah. So basically, this is from Letterboxd. A New York University professor returns from a rescue mission to the Amazon rainforest with the footage shot by a lost team of documentarians who were making a film about the area's local cannibal tribes. So basically, they go and try to find this group of documentarians, and then what they find is their footage. Hey, weren't we talking? Did I say like an episode or two ago, like, oh yeah, like Blair Witch is like one of the pioneers of found footage or whatnot? Well, isn't this the pioneer of found footage? I was 100% incorrect, was I not?
Well, at least 98% incorrect.
And do you know what's ass sucking hilarious about that? I had seen this movie. So what kind of a bizarre statement was that?
So what's interesting, though, is, I mean, it's found footage, but it's not 100% found footage. What I found really cool was that they spent almost as much of the movie finding the footage and then showing us the found footage. So yeah. You look at all these other found footage movies like Blair Witch and Wreck and Quarantine and Cloverfield, and it's all, you're watching what they found. Cannibal Holocaust shows you how they found it. And then you watch what they found, but you're watching other people watch what they found, and you're seeing some very interesting dilemmas happen in these characters' minds about what to do with this footage. So it's definitely a pioneer for found footage, but it's done in a way that no one's... I mean, I'm sure people have tried to replicate it with all these other cannibal movies too, but when you talk about things like Blair Witch, it's not a true copy of the formula.
Yeah, I suppose you're right there, Jason. That's one thing I really like about this movie is how they did it, how it was a mix between both non-found footage and the found footage itself. I thought that was very, very cool.
So before we go too far into this...
We've gone too far, Jason. There's no going back. We can't unsee what we've already seen.
Well, I'm not saying we stop the podcast. I'm saying before we go too far into...
Press the record button. Or unpress the record button. Enough is enough.
You can't unblow a horn.
Gross.
If you were to be asked to make a very disturbing movie, what kind of elements would you put into it?
I'd put everything that this movie had.
Well, definite trigger warnings. If you've avoided this movie because you've heard about how graphic and offensive it is, you might even find it too much to hear about what's going on in this movie. So, you know, we're going to be talking about actual violence and killing of animals, which is a huge issue. There are multiple scenes of rape in this movie.
Oh, God, no. There's some swearing. There's an F-bomb or two in there.
Well, and let's not forget the mutilation of male genitalia.
Oh, God.
See, have to ring bell again for that.
So yeah, let's talk about the production, because I've read a lot about this as well. Filmed actually on location in an Amazon rainforest in Colombia on a $100,000 budget at the time. They used real tribes, though the tribes that they used were not portrayed accurately.
They weren't cannibal tribes, were they?
I don't think they were cannibal tribes. And even then, the rituals and things like that were not accurate.
That's what I was wondering, if the rituals were accurate or not, or they just made it up.
You're dealing with a movie that's trying to glamorize all of this for a civilized society to ooh and ah at, right?
Yeah, well, let's start with all the animal cruelty business. See, this is the thing. This is where I become like the most hypocritical dude in the world, right? Because I'm all like, why do you kill this turtle, say? They kill a turtle, and it's on screen, and it's very gross and violent. And
it's like a four-foot diameter turtle.
And the thing about this is, so look at that, 12 years later, that's like the main thing I remembered about this movie. And so I've watched it again, and once again, that's all I'm talking about. So it's like, Jesus Christ, man, like... But then I'm all like, yeah, I'm going to go and have a burger. So I wonder if I knew how everything happened, if I wouldn't eat burgers and stuff. Because, you know, like, I'm from a small town, as we all are. And a lot of the people go out and, you know, they hunt and cook their own meat and stuff. And I've always been fine with that. And for instance, like this particular turtle, I'm assuming they're actually eating that turtle in the scene afterwards.
I think it's important to point out that There were six animals that died in this movie, with the exception of the tarantula. And maybe, I don't know, it's possible they ate that too, but with the exception of the tarantula, I think all of the other ones were eaten by the tribes off camera. You know, these were tribes that ate these animals anyway.
Because the tribes that they used in the movie were from Colombia, and like, it makes sense to assume that they hunt animals themselves and that sort of thing. But what really bothered me about it was just the way that they were killed. Like, the documentarians were taking extreme pleasure in killing them. And it seemed like that was very unrealistic. Like, a tribe wouldn't do something like that.
Well, there's so much I want to talk about here, because I want to go back and talk about what Dave said, but I also want to talk about what you just said, Jeff. So, Dave, you're talking about, if you knew how a cow was killed, whether you'd still eat hamburgers.
Yeah.
The issue that people have is not that tribes kill turtles and kill monkeys and kill... It wasn't a muskrat, actually. It was a... What's... A coati?
Yeah. And that was terrible.
That was terrible. Coati. And it wasn't the fact that tribes kill these animals and eat them. It's that these animals were killed for the movie.
Yes.
And then they were eaten.
Yeah, they were eaten, at least.
With the monkeys, there were actually two monkeys that were killed because it was shot twice. And I got to say, that was just as hard to watch as the turtle thing for me. There had been discussions on using a fake monkey. But according to internet sources, the tribes actually convinced the filmmakers to use real monkeys because they did want to eat the monkeys. So there's that. But the bigger issue I had was... Well, I mean, there's all sorts of issues here, but one of the things that really made me sad was that in a couple of the cases, the actors had actually befriended these animals prior to them being killed. And so in the case of the coati and the pig, the actors had actually almost adopted them, and then they had to watch them get killed on the camera. And that's just one thing that must have contributed to an overall very, very traumatic set.
Yeah, you would think so. I tell you what, man, like, I work on film sets and stuff these days, and whenever we have animals, first off, I tell you, the amount of takes you got to do when you have a goddamn animal. But secondly, I digress. Like, if anything, like, if there was any kind of harm or anything to an animal, like, on our set, man, holy cow, would there be friggin', what do you call those, red flags and phone calls, and the guy would never work again, I tell you, these days, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you can probably thank Cannibal Holocaust for that.
The weird thing is, it all kind of happens in like a 10-minute span, doesn't it? I'm just like, didn't it just like there was just like all these animal killings within like 10 minutes or something? And it's like, Jesus Christ, enough with the goddamn animal killings, I kind of said in my head.
I mean, I'm going to answer this by going back to what Grave Robber said earlier about the documentary film crew So these guys were taking such joy in this. I mean, the actors themselves were definitely not, but they were portraying people that enjoyed killing these animals. I was not prepared for... Like, I had heard about the concept of this movie. I had heard the synopsis for years. I was always thinking, oh, those poor documentarians. I was not prepared for how big of assholes they were.
I was just going to say how big of a tool bags they were.
Exactly. And so I don't know if that... I wouldn't say that's a spoiler necessarily, because you find out pretty damn fast. That's
not really, because the first half of the movie, you don't know anything.
You're introduced to them through some of their early footage.
At that point, they're not really ass hats, as Jeff was saying.
Yeah, well,
tool bags,
yeah.
Ass hats, it's all the same.
Tool bags.
Would the movie have been any less disturbing if the documentary team was more sympathetic? Because on the one hand, maybe all these things wouldn't have happened. Yeah, but on the other hand, you would feel a lot worse for them.
That's a good point, because by the end, I wouldn't say it's really a tragic ending. You know what I'm saying?
It's not really spoilers, because the whole concept is you're finding the footage of a documentary team that disappeared in the Amazon.
Oh, yeah. I guess
so. Right. There's that whole concept of the movie. Well, let's talk about the director.
Sure. Ruggero Diatto? Diodato? Ruggero Diodato. From such wonderful films as House on the Edge of the Park, Live Like a Cop, Die Like a Man, Body Count. Ooh, look at this. He did one called Jungle Holocaust. I wonder what Jungle Holocaust was all about. Oh my God, The Washing Machine? That looks pretty cool. Ooh, Waves of Lust.
Interesting side note as well. It was written by Gianfranco Clerici. Do you remember where we talked about him before?
No, please indulge us.
Gianfranco Clerici wrote New York Ripper.
Get out of town.
And he also wrote Jungle Holocaust and House on the Edge of the Park. So he was a frequent collaborator with Ruggero Diodato. And, well, let's continue on through the cast, and then we'll get into some of the other fun facts about Cannibal Holocaust. Robert Kerman plays Professor Harold Monroe. And he's the guy that's leading up the rescue team. I did find it kind of funny that the rescue team was a team of three people. Like, they're going deep into the Amazon jungle, and it's three people. One of them's like a middle-aged college professor. Now, this guy, though, he starred in a lot of 70s porn. And
oh, you don't say.
Including Debbie Does Dallas and other such classics. The rumor is, or the lore is, that had Diodato realized he was a porn actor, he would never have hired him, but this was Robert Kerman's attempt to get into mainstream movies. Oh boy, did he pick a good one to try to get into mainstream movies.
So you're telling me Robert Kerman was the porn actor?
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I'll be damned, because I didn't mind him as an actor.
I know, well, even with the porn mustache.
Yeah, well, kind of added to his aura or allure or whatever the hell you call that.
So if you look at his IMDb, it's hilarious because there's like 23 movies made in 1977. And you know, they list them all. And bizarrely, one of his last movie roles was as the tugboat captain in Spider-Man 2002.
Get out of town. Yep. So he did make it. He did make it. In the mainstream film
business.
He's going
to make it after all. After Cannibal Holocaust, he starred in Cannibal Ferox. Again, these words that you never expect to have to say out loud.
That's why we're letting you say them tonight. Thank you there, Jason.
Yeah. Watchouthorror@gmail.com if you want to send in pronunciation corrections. The four documentarians, we have Carl Gabriel York, Luca Barbareschi, Perry Perkinen, and Francesca Ciardi. Ciardi played Faye Daniels. It was her first role. Perry Perkinen played Jack Anders. He was the blonde cameraman. He was also in Cannibal Ferox and City of the Living Dead, both uncredited roles. Luca Barbareschi was Mark Tommaso, and Carl Gabriel York was Alan Yates. Grave Robber Jeff, you might be interested to know that Carl Gabriel York also starred in Idle Hands. I mean, I don't think he starred in Idle Hands, but he was an actor in Idle Hands.
I love Idle Hands. How can you not love Idle Hands, man? God, talk about a feel-good movie from 1999. Anyway, back to Cannibal Holocaust.
Yes, not a feel-good movie from 1999. Carl Gabriel York was cast because he had the right size feet. Because he was brought in as a last-minute replacement. They had already bought all the wardrobe. So they're like, oh, well, you fit all the clothes, so hey, hop on a plane. And he didn't even know what kind of movie it was until he got there. And his first scene that he was shooting was the amputation of a leg. And he's like, what the hell am I doing?
Jesus.
Francesca Ciardi, I mean, good Lord, this is her first role. She's asked to do a lot of stuff in here that would make a lot of seasoned actors very uncomfortable. There's stories about her disagreeing about the amount of nudity that she should be doing and having the director pull her aside and scream at her in Italian until she gave up and just did it. But then at the same time, there's a story of her propositioning Carl Gabriel York to go practice their sex scenes in advance of the filming, and Carl Gabriel York saying, oh, wait, I've got a girlfriend, and that actually causing some strife in there. So add to that all the feelings of the animal killings, and like, you know, it just doesn't sound like this was a film experience that I would want to be part of.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I find that it does feel very real.
I was just going to say, based on like how real it looked, like this is one of the neat stories that I read about, is that once it was released, the Italian courts actually arrested the director for murder because they thought the people in the video had actually died. And the director had the main actors of the document crew sign contracts to not appear in public for the next year, so it would maintain the illusion that they actually died. And so once he got arrested, he said, oh my God, you got to go get those guys and prove that I didn't actually kill him, which they showed up and then the charges were dropped.
So that was quite an ingenious thing to do, you know what I'm saying?
He was very good at drumming up the publicity, but he was too good at it. Mm-hmm. And he had some people tell him, oh, that this movie is amazing, it looks so incredible, but you're going to be in trouble with a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, it's like, so I was lying there watching it at like 3 a.m. last night in my bed on my phone beside my sleeping wife. Thank God she didn't see what I was watching. But anyway, so like all the animal stuff, right? It obviously puts you in a weird state of feeling, right? So for the rest of the movie, it was almost like it threw me into a, like, how real was everything else then? Like, obviously they weren't killing people and stuff, but so, you know, so sometimes you're going, geez, man, like some of that looks pretty real. Some of that stuff, you know what I'm saying?
So that's a great point, and it's an established method of tricking the audience,
mm-hmm.
where you show something that's real, and then you show them something that looks real, because they're in the mindset that, okay, well, they've accepted this first part to be real, then it's easier to accept the second part. Yeah. If you look at the example of, say, Friday the 13th, Tom Savini talked about this quite a bit, where the scene with the axe, now, when the axe is actually swung, it's a real axe that hits the light fixture that's dangling above it. So you get this clang and you see the light move. So you're like, holy smokes, it's a real axe. And then a quick cut later and it's embedded in someone's face and it's a rubber axe. But you're not seeing a rubber axe, you're seeing the real axe that hit the light a split second before.
Well, I tell you what, man, back in whenever this was released, if you didn't know that, because they were pretty well unknown actors, the documentarians, right? So you didn't know who the hell they were. And if you watch that movie, like, I could understand it being so controversial. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it still is, but I mean, who knows what you would have thought if you watched it back then and you didn't know everything we knew now, right? Like, I could totally see the reason why they'd take him to court and everything. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, exactly. The advances in makeup effects were just starting to get really more realistic, right? I mean, I look at it, to be honest, I looked at it and I'm like, okay, it's not real. As a horror fan, you're not gonna look at that and you're not gonna mistake it for being real in this day and age. Like, if this is one of the first horror movies you've watched, I can see how the line would be very blurred and you would have a hard time being able to tell what is real and what is not. And that's by design. That's what they did with this movie.
Did you see that ass smoking? Like when the guy gets his wiener cut off, say? Like, I watched that 10 times. And I said, hey, that looks really real. I'm just kidding. I didn't watch
it. You didn't go back and rewind that in slow motion?
I paused it and I slowed it down. No, I'm just kidding. But no, like, I just think everything looks super real and was well done. So it does get you thinking, you know what I'm saying?
But you add in the fact that it's, we didn't add this to our list of all the items we would put in our most disturbing movie, but because it's found footage and it's all shaky camera, you don't get to focus on some of the details as much, right? But you know that when you see someone attacked by a group of cannibals, you can tell it's not really happening.
Well, maybe
the Italian
court
sure thought they did.
Yeah, take that, Jason the Terrible.
Although it was 1980.
All right, anyway. Well, should we move into our rating segments? Because...
Jeez, I guess so. Let's talk about, what do we start with? The scary rating.
We Ooh. Start with scary. So
spooky.
I'm going to give it like a 3. It felt more tense than scary. And I'm talking more about the original rescue party, the rescue party that goes out to try to find the documentary mm-hmm. film crew. Mm-hmm. Because there's real tension there that they're going to get attacked and killed by these tribes. That's the scary part. I don't think you can describe the rest of it as scary.
Yeah, I guess not scary, kind of uneasy. You know
disturbing.
What I mean? So it's disturbing. Yeah, exactly. Can't we wait have for the disturbometer. I was going to say, that's going to be exciting. Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, you're right. It's not really scary. So I'd give it a kind of a 3-ish 2. You know what I'm saying? I agree with you there.
Yeah, because that's the stupid thing is that they set it up that maybe it should be scary, but then the second part of the movie, the more scary part is the people behind the camera. And so at that point, it's just not the same.
You're not nervous for them.
Nope.
No, you're cheering for the cannibals. That's what I was doing.
Yeah, me too. Hey, hey, hold on. There's two things we didn't discuss. We didn't discuss the music.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We should probably discuss the music.
Well, who wants to start? Because you both said, oh, yeah. So
let's let Jeff start this.
Yeah, so in terms of the soundtrack, there's some pretty effective songs in there. Like, he had this one theme, I guess, that anytime something crazy was happening on screen, it would have the song with, like, this, boo.
Oh, boo, yeah.
Boo. And when it, and then when it was, like, really bad, it was boo, boo. And so anytime you heard that song, you're like, ah, crap, something bad's going to happen. And at the same time, the goddamn intro to the movie is some
Simon and Garfunkel thing.
Simon Garfunkel's, was it Simon and Garfunkel?
No.
Or just that sort of music.
I was going to make some joke when we were listing all the disturbing things. I was going to say classical guitar, you know?
Yeah. That was so, that's the thing that's bugging me a bit, because there was so many things that were actually well done.
Jeff, and, oh my yeah. God, how you did that song was exactly. And then when something really bad happens, boo, boo. And that's exactly what happened. Oh my God. But no, that was, yeah. I loved that because it wasn't nice. It was ugly sounding.
It was. And what was freaking annoying.
Yeah. And what was on the screen was obviously very ugly too. So it added to the ugliness of everything. Anyway, good job, Jeff. Jesus Christ. I haven't laughed like that since I was watching the turtle sequence. Oh, oh, God, I feel so sick. Anyway. No, I apologize. That was of low class. I hated that. And I can tell you how much I hated that because... Like I say, I've brought it up a million times.
Well,
but anyway.
God. Yeah, I mean, well, let's do the disturbometer then. And cause
hey, can I go first?
Well, no. Because oh. I wanted to use that as a segue to continue talking about the turtle, so hang on.
Okay.
I mean, the scientific
how the hell are we laughing so hard?
Well, cuz this is this is really how you deal with stuff sometimes.
I guess you're right.
And let's just say, listeners, we're not laughing because we enjoyed watching a turtle get killed.
Quite the opposite, actually, because
there were several times in this movie where I sort of was looking down and to the left, you know, just because it was a bit much, like, especially with that Coty.
Yeah.
But with this turtle, just... I don't want to get into details with it, but the scientific part of me was like, oh, so that's what a turtle anatomy looks like.
That's something I never wanted to see or never was even curious of seeing. No,
well, but then you look at that, it's like, well, like, it doesn't look like there's a lot of meat to eat with that.
I know. Oh.
And so, you know, whether tribes actually eat it or not, I don't really care to know the details about that, but the fact that we have to watch that happen, I don't know, guys. I mean, in terms of Disturbometer, you want to go first, right, Dave?
I did. Can I?
I'll let you go first. You did.
This
pick
is pretty
the movie.
Exciting. Oh, yeah. Thanks. Great. This is pretty exciting because this is going to be my first ever 10 out of 10 on the Disturbometer. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, well, I was going to say the same, but I let you have the honor.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to Jeeves for picking said movie, or suggesting said movie.
Did you just call him up by name?
I sure did. Thanks, Jeeves. You handsome son of a bitch.
Anyway, Jeff, we didn't skip over you. What about you for Disturbometer? Are we gonna hit a perfect 30 out of 30 for this one?
Yeah, well, how could you not, right? And just for context, again, this is a 40-year-old movie.
Yeah, and it's the most disturbing movie. Is it the most disturbing movie I've seen? I think it might just be.
Well, we didn't even touch on all the sexual violence and stuff in there.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah. And that's, like, really bad.
It's terrible.
Hey, hold on. Hey, this is a great segue, Jason. You know how you like your segues? Because we've got a rating section called Hoots and Such. Well, let's talk about the hoots and such. There's a lot of hoots and such in this particular movie. Very, very offensive. Very unenjoyable. And like I said, a lot of it.
And
Jesus Christ. And some, like, and sorry, but a lot of unnecessary, I think. Don't you think? I guess you could argue the whole movie's unnecessary, so who knows what was actually necessary and what was unnecessary.
You could argue that. I mean, there's just as much male nudity as there is female nudity, but in terms of the sexual violence, it's all very one-sided. And
well, hold on. That guy gets his wiener chopped off.
I wouldn't call that sexual violence, but...
Well, it's of sexual organs? No, but yes, sorry. I didn't mean to make light of it. Go on.
No. I don't think you were making light of it. But no, I mean, there were scenes in there that... And even the consensual sex scene between...
Was disgusting.
The actress, Francesca Ciardi. This was one of the scenes where she didn't want to do it. Well, so put yourself in her shoes. She's basically told the director, I'm not comfortable doing this. And she's been taken to the side and screamed at for 20 minutes in a language she speaks Italian too, so she understands Italian. And then you go back and shoot the scene. It looks like an uncomfortable, awkward, disturbing sex scene.
Yeah, which is kind of weird because why would she, like in the context of the movie then, why would she be doing it then?
Because this documentary film crew is nuts.
No, I know that, but like... Shouldn't she be showing some kind of joy then?
Yeah, but she was also the one that was not... She was the one that was objecting to certain things, too.
No, she was still pretty bad.
Yeah, but anyway. But she was objecting to more things than the rest of them were.
I suppose you're right. Anyway, hey, this was a category. And yes, very high on...
It's severely over the top.
Yeah, and lots of sexual violence. Yeah. That was not enjoyable to sit through. Yeah. Okay, so what the hell next? I think we go... Oh, gore. The gore-o-meter.
Oh, and that brings up the... I remember I read something in the trivia that made me think, oh, well, this isn't the person who wrote this isn't qualified to write trivia about this movie. They wrote something like, and maybe you can find it, Jeff. They said, "This is considered to be one of the goriest films of all time, even gorier than Suspiria."
Well,
I'm like,
yeah.
I don't remember. I don't remember Suspiria being that gory. And then it says, "And even gorier than Human Centipede." I'm like, have you seen Human Centipede? It's not that gory.
It's gross.
Well, those are kind of like, those are kind of like the shock value present day movies, right?
Not even, not Suspiria. That well, wasn't that
you know,
shocking,
oh, hey, I would say like Suspiria, Hostel.
But Human Centipede for sure. Oh, yeah. Well, Hostel, maybe Hostel.
Hostel the, comes up a lot because the director did a cameo in Hostel 2.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah, he did a cannibal cameo as the cannibal Italian customer in Hostel 2.
You know what? I gotta watch those again. Oh, hey, what about The Green Inferno?
Oh, that was something else I was gonna say about this movie too. But
well, it's a good thing I brought it up. What?
Yeah, I was gonna say we might as well have had a drinking game every time they say Green Inferno.
Yeah. I think I'm going to watch that pretty soon, though.
Here's just one other funny tidbit that just goes to show that...
Because there's so many funny tidbits about this movie.
But just like humanity in general, right? Like,
oh,
the movie's so disturbing, yet people really want to watch it. It's like you're driving by an accident on the highway.
Mm.
You have the instinct to look for whatever reason, right? So anyways, the second highest grossing film in Japan in 1983 was Cannibal Holocaust, right behind E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Like, see? Like, what the heck? People are weird.
And
we are
so
weird.
You were talking about that quote, Dave, the who is the real cannibal?
Yeah. Oh, no, not the cannibal, but the real monster.
Well, what was the actual quote?
Well, I made it up.
No, oh, I can look it up.
It's in there.
I wonder who the real cannibals are.
Yeah.
Well, holy shit, they ripped me off.
So this is the problem I have with that question. Obviously, that's the question you got to ask. They're just beating you over the head with it. If you're going to have a theme to a movie, you don't have to spell it out so directly. It's obvious that they're showing the contrast between the developed world and the atrocities that they can commit versus the natural world. And they're asking the question, which is worse? And the movie, I'm pretty sure, wants to answer itself.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a quote from the TV executive who wants to show this film. This TV executive sits there in the middle of the movie and says, "The more you rape their senses, the happier they are." Okay. You're basically saying that you're making this movie as disturbing as you can make it, because that's what people want to see. As a society, it's pretty depressing to come to that realization. But there's some criticism thrown... I mean, there's lots of criticism thrown at this movie, but there's some specific criticism saying, okay, you're trying to make a learned example of trying to show how violent domesticated people can be by making a movie that's really violent. You know, is this the best way to draw attention to this problem? To create another piece of media that perpetuates the problem.
Because I guess that was the whole point of it, right? Was to make that statement.
You don't have to go so far over the top to make that statement. You don't have to kill animals to make that statement.
Do you know what's really bizarre here? Well, it's not. But I'm here. I said, hey, just for a LARF, I'm going to click on the Parents Guide to Cannibal Holocaust on the Internet Movie Database. And I tell you what. They didn't watch the uncut version, that's for sure. A rape scene is implied. Nothing shown, however. A man's penis is shown for a few seconds. It gets cut off screen. However, the bloody appendix is briefly shown after. Well, it wasn't cut off screen, that's for sure. Oh yeah, a man takes off all his clothes and goes into a lake. His butt is shown the whole time. No mention of his wiener and the many women that show up after. So, yes, don't go by the parental guidance, or sorry, the parental's guide on the Internet Movie Database.
Yeah, as a parent, don't be thinking about showing your child Cannibal Holocaust anyway.
What a horrible...
I guarantee you that warning that Shudder puts up at the beginning is probably not going to dissuade a curious kid.
So. I think you might be correct, fella. Anywho, I guess we got to give our overall ratings here. Who wants to start off?
Who's brave enough?
Yeah, ooh, this is going to say a lot.
Is it? Are you going to put that much pressure on it?
Okay, pals. I'll go first since I picked said movie, although it kind of feels like I should go last, but I'll go first. I'm going to go controversial here and not give it a rating at all.
What? You can't
Can you
do
believe
that.
It? Hey, whoa. I just did. Isn't that controversial? Just like this movie.
Nice try.
No, I literally don't have a rating.
Well, you got it.
Well, I'll tell you. Listen to this. This is what I really think. I think it was a good idea for a movie. And I think it was... God, this... It sucks because I don't want to be like, hey, I really like this movie, even though it has all that awful stuff in it. But at the same time, it was like... It made you feel so awful. And it was a movie that made you feel that way. So what it meant to... What it set out to do, it did... quite significantly, and I think it was a good idea for a movie. I obviously am against certain things within said movie, so, but overall I think it's, I guess, good, pretty good, but I can't give it a rating. On to you, Jason.
You're
the terrible.
Wussing out, Dave, come on. All right, so I am gonna give it a rating. Yeah.
Not so easy, is it, Jason the Terrible?
No, I have the number in my head. I'm trying to figure out how to explain it. What you were saying is really the way to evaluate this movie is, did it do what it set out to do? And it absolutely did. You know, there are not many scenes that I have that I'm almost turning my head away that I don't want to watch. And just knowing that they're real animals, it's pretty drawn out scenes, and it's heartbreaking. That right there is a reason to never watch this movie if that's something that's going to really bother you. So that's my biggest issue with it. Everything else, it's a story. It's a very violent and dirty and gross and misogynistic, and it's a terrible story, but it's a story. The feeling that it gave me afterwards was it was not a movie that made me feel good to watch it at all. It was a piece of cinema that was done very well, and it's polarizing. So I gave it a 7 out of 10. These ratings are not how much you enjoyed the movie.
Well, that's not necessarily true. That's what I do. What are you talking about?
In this case, I'm not rating it based on how much I enjoyed the movie. I'm rating it the qualities of the movie.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Because the reason I didn't rate it anything was because I rate them how much I enjoy them. And the problem is, I didn't enjoy the movie at all. But at the same time, it was...
That's why you watched it, was to not enjoy it.
Yeah, do you know, it's the most bizarre thing.
Well,
but I can't give it like a low rating because it's not like it does, but I can't give it a high rating. So I choose to not give it a rating at all.
See, I couldn't justify an 8 or a 9 or a 10. It's just, you know, you just can't do that. But to me, it's an above average experience.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because
that's a way of looking at it.
I'm rating the experience. In the case of a Mondo... cannibal jungle found footage movie, this was a hell of an experience. This is the cannibal movie.
You know what I'm going to do there, Jay? I'm going to rate it our go-to rating of 6 out of 10.
The judges will accept that.
Woohoo! I can't not rate a movie. I almost didn't, though. Grave Robin Jeff, what do you rate Cannibal Holocaust?
Yeah, I thought I'd make like a table of pros and cons, but because that's what bugged me a lot, was that there are certain things that were really well done, like the way they hop between the found footage and back. I thought was really neat. The way they used the music and the sound effects I thought was really neat. But yeah, the whole found footage part just completely rubbed me the wrong way just because of how sick the filmmakers were. I couldn't get past that. Like, it didn't make any sense. But then looking from the overall view, if that was the point, was that we as human beings will watch whatever rapes our senses the most, like the movie suggested. And so does that make it a success? Because it kind of shows that. But at the same time, how many people are actually watching it? What can I even say that? Because it was the highest grossing movie in Japan. So a lot of people were watching it. So it seems that, like you said, it kind of shines a light on the issue, but it kind of perpetuates the issue at the same time. So, yeah, very tricky one to rate. So I will say 5.1. because generally, anything over a 5 is a watch, and anything under a 5 is not. And if you're a horror fan, it's almost like you have to watch it. That's why the 0.1, just to put it just a bit above the line there. But at the same time, it's going to be uncomfortable if you have certain feelings towards animals and that sort of thing.
Well, that was very well thought out.
That was pretty good, Jeff.
Can I ask just one thing?
Oh, sure. God, no.
So if it turned out that the animal killings were not real, how would that change your view of everything?
I would have been wondering why they were spending so much time killing a fake turtle.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the thing. Like, it's so bizarre. Why did they spend so much time on it?
There's no point in showing them preparing their food other than to disturb us.
You know what? I swear it comes back to this. It made me feel super uncomfortable, right? And then for the rest of the movie, it made me feel... the rest was super uncomfortable too, right?
As a fan of movies, you know how they do some of those things. But when you show something real and you're filming something as if it was real, that's why it's a 10 out of 10 on the Disturbometer.
Yeah.
So right. That's why that stuff was there. It was there for the shock value. If they used a synthetic turtle to do it, then it's like, well, there's no point in showing them take apart this fake turtle. It's not going to be shocking.
Do you know what's crazy? Like, we're sitting here talking about the animal cruelty and the rapelings, but we're fine with anything to do with the fake violence towards humans. You know what I'm saying?
We didn't even talk about the fact that there is people eating people.
oh my God.
It's like animal holocaust. We didn't even talk about that once.
Oh my God.
I can't remember a specific scene where some cannibal is eating something.
There was. There was at the beginning. There was a tribe eating an arm, if I remember correctly.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
And then, I mean, it's implied that they would have eaten everybody, right?
But when you think about the amount of screen time devoted to it, there's far more devoted to everything else.
Yeah.
That is true.
So the name of the movie wasn't originally Cannibal Holocaust. It was originally going to be The Green Inferno, Everybody Take a Drink.
Ah.
But they changed it because Cannibal Holocaust sounds scarier and more disturbing,
mm-hmm.
especially the word Holocaust, right? And so, I mean, it's about cannibal tribes, but the point is not the cannibalism so much. I don't know. This was a rough one. I have to say, when you suggested it, I wasn't exactly looking forward to it because I knew what I was getting myself into, and I've been putting it off for a while. But I knew it was one that I was going to watch eventually because...
Are you happy that you watched it?
You know what? When people ask why you watch horror movies, part of my answer is always that it's a sense of accomplishment that you can survive something and you feel like you're okay at the end.
Do you feel okay at the end of this one?
I'm not going to say a piece of my soul has left and I'm never going to get it back. But it was pretty uncomfortable.
Hey, this is definitely one that I'm glad I didn't watch with the wife. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, maybe after she listens to this episode, she can tell you if she has any interest in watching it.
She'll be like, I can't believe you didn't invite me to watch that one. It sounded like a blast. Anyway, fellas, any last-minute things you want to add to our feature review of Cannibal Holocaust 1980?
If you do watch this movie, watch Society after. It'll make you feel better.
Did you watch Society first or second?
No, it was second.
Oh, good. Well, that made you feel better then, I'm sure.
That's what I just said.
Fantastic.
All right, listeners. Well, I imagine a lot of you have watched Cannibal Holocaust. Be very interested to hear what you guys think of that. Drop us a line at watchouthorror@gmail.com. You can also connect with us on Twitter at watchouthorror or on Instagram at watchouthorrorcast. Or you can talk to Slice and Dice and Dave directly at Slice and Dice and Dave on Twitter.
That's me. Hey, this was a very interesting one to do.
It definitely makes you talk. If that was part of the point of the movie, then they certainly achieved it. It's funny because Diodato later on would be saying lots of things about how he regretted putting in all the animal violence and how he never really had an ulterior motive of, you know, who's the real cannibals. Sure, he didn't. I mean, the whole movie's about that, so of course he did. But it's interesting that he's probably got so much shit for this over his entire career.
Yeah. You know. Do you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to look up interviews with the actors about that later on in their lives to see if there is any.
I think there's a ton of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Do you think?
Oh, yeah. I'm assuming. But just based on the stories, and maybe the stories are sensationalized, I don't know. But these were all relatively new actors. One of the trivia said that one of the guys thought that he, like, continuously thought that they were going to kill him for this movie. Now, that just sounds like something that they would say to make it sound more sensational, but...
Well, you never know, man. You never know. Anywho, fellas.
I think we're going to call it an episode here. And so, until next time, and there will be a next time, be safe, treat each other well, and go watch some horror movies.
All right, fellas. Hugs and kisses. Talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to Watch Out. The opinions you've just heard have been made by three guys from Canada. Please keep this in mind and enjoy responsibly.
Heidi Kozak is actually the pimple popper girl from Sleeper. I can't even talk. Oh my god!
Hey, fellas, this is Grave Robin. I guess. Holy shit! I can't even get our names right here. Hey, fellas.
There's gonna be a lot of blooper reels on this one.
I don't think we could put that in the thing. Maybe we should. Oh my god. And there you go, written by that guy that did the New York Ripper.
Yeah.
The one scene with the tongues.
You keep
lips.
Talking about that scene.
Such a terrible scene. God, that guy's a sicko.
Listeners, go back and listen to our New York Ripper episode.
There you go. Jeffrey, did you rob enough graves? Oh, never mind. Jeffrey the... Grave Robin Jeff? Sorry, Jay, I'll do the segue here. Here we go.